Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Since 2011, the Bay Nature Institute has honored Bay Area activists, environmental educators, and up-and-coming young conservationists at their annual Local Hero Awards ceremony. Well, this year's ceremony will be taking place in person after a two-year virtual hiatus. It'll be at the David Brower Center in Berkeley, California on March 27th from 2 to 5 p.m. You can find ticket information at yourcallradio.org. The ceremony will also be online. And today we are so happy to be joined by three of the award winners. Solwazi Alla received the Young Leader Award for the work he does with Urban Tilth, a nonprofit based in Richmond, California, that was founded in 2005 to help build a more sustainable, healthy, and just local food system. Solwazi leads Urban Tilth's efforts to restore often neglected riparian habitat in West Contra Costa County by removing invasive species, introducing native species, and trying to bring back ecosystems that have been lost through urbanization. As part of his work, Solwazi helps young people connect with their local waterways. Hi, Solwazi. Thanks so much for joining us and congratulations on your award.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Megan Isidore. Megan will receive the Environmental Educator Award. Megan is co-founder and executive director of the River Otter Ecology Project. She co-founded the project in 2012 to investigate the under-the-radar return of river otters to the Bay Area after their numbers had dwindled. The River Otter Ecology Project has grown into a robust organization that supports watershed conservation by researching and linking otter recovery to the health of watersheds through education, research, and their community-based otter sighting tool, the Otter Spotter. Megan, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on your award.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. Richard Tejada will receive the Community Hero Award. Richard founded Saved by Nature in 2018 to connect underserved South Bay communities with the healing power of nature experiences and to share his own story of how fishing and time in nature helped him overcome a South San Jose childhood marred by gang violence. Richard's nonprofit offers in-person and virtual nature hikes to youth of color, boys and girls clubs, seniors, and people living with disabilities. Richard has a decade of experience developing natural and cultural education programs for parks organizations like the Guadalupe River Park Conservancy, where he created and delivered hands-on field trips for special needs and K-12 students. Richard, you do such amazing work. Thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on your award.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, and I look forward to the discussion today.
Well, I appreciate all of you, and I have to say it's just great to take a breather, really, and do a show like this that is really positive. You're all doing such good work in the community, such important work. You know, I just think about the IPCC report that came out. We're looking at high temperatures in certain places that are not used to it. Horrific hurricanes just in Texas and New Orleans just happened over the last 2 days. And then, of course, there's the horrific invasion of Ukraine, the Putin invasion of Ukraine. So I just want to ask you all first, what does this work mean to you at this time? I mean, we're at such an incredible time in our history. And I'm sure, of course, every generation says this, but we have more information on the climate crisis than any other generation. So, Richard, let's start off with you. I mean, it's kind of a big question, but what does doing this work mean to you at this particular moment?
Oh, that's, it's funny because I just want to laugh because I was like, she's going to start with me. But no, it's such a, you know, a serious question. And for me, you know, graduating not too long ago, you know, I'm pretty up to date, you know, with a professor that just recently wrote a book on climate change. You know, for us, you know, and I don't mean to be doom and gloom, but it is the question that you asked. And having two environmental degrees, you know, knowing that at any moment we can reach that threshold of no return is just scary. And so for me, environmental education is about, you know, how do we expect people to care about something they know nothing about? And it's also about restoring through education. And so, it is a scary time. And, you know, and if we look at the weather, even recently, I mean, it was just really, really cold. And then it's really, really hot. And I don't know what to do with my native plant garden, you know? And so, I think that it's an honor and a pleasure to be able to educate the community. And climate change is one of the things that we do talk about. And I know that there's people that still are disbelievers, you know? And so there's organizations out there that, such as The Oath, that was just created, and asking community members to take the oath. And one of those things that they take the oath about is believing that climate change is real. And for me, you know, working over the last decade in this field, I get to see with my own eyes, you know, some of the changes in our environment with local climate change and worldwide global warming. So, yeah.
Well, thank you for that. I have not heard of The Oath, but I just looked it up. I'm reading from Green Matters. A group of activists in the outdoor space have come together to found the Outdoorist Oath, a new nonprofit that will bring together outdoorists, a far more inclusive term than the oft-used outdoorsmen, to advocate for both people and the planet. So interesting. Thank you for that. And then you also reminded me of a Washington Post headline from March 18th. It's 70 degrees warmer than normal in eastern Antarctica. Scientists are flabbergasted, and we're going to do a show about that soon. What about you, Megan? What are your thoughts about doing the work, the important work you do for otters at this time?
Well, you just ran down all the things that keep me up at night, for sure. And we are in a really bad place on this planet right now. However, there are possibilities for us as humans to change the way we do things. In fact, it's not just a possibility. We have to. And how we choose to do it is, I think, the way forward for us. If we can choose in community, with other organizations, with other people, with governments, we may make it through in a better way, saving more species than we will otherwise. So to me, this is a huge inflection point, and I'm really hopeful because I see organizations like Urban Tilth and all of our local heroes and many of the people we partner with. We all have young people that we work with, and young people need hope. So the return of the river otters for me provides a little bit of hope. And that's because river otters were gone from the San Francisco Bay Area for decades. And they were gone because we had messed up our waterways. We hadn't restored our waterways, conserved anything. San Francisco Bay was a messy, dirty, smelly area. And with things that happened 50 and more years ago, like the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act, which hadn't really been thought about before, we started to clean up, and we were pretty successful in doing that, to the point where a really charismatic and fun predator like river otters were able to come back. They came back on their own, not because we brought them back. They came back because we put policies and laws in place and started doing the work to allow them to come back. So they are a hopeful story in a really tough time that we're having right now. And we try to work with that and help people understand that the changes that we make send ripples far, far into the future that we may not understand at the time that we're making the changes.
That is such an important message, and I really look forward to learning more. Just to remind all of us about what the SF Bay, what the health of the bay was, and then just what it looked like, and how you brought back the river otters, because this is such an incredible story. So thank you for that, Megan. What about you, Solwazi? What would you add about how you think about your work at this moment in time?
I would say it's just an overall feeling of responsibility, just being on this earth and being a fan of this planet and just an admirer of its beauty. You kind of feel like if you're able to do anything to help it heal, that you should do it. And so when I found out about Urban Tilth, it just felt like a perfect opportunity to engage myself in the community and also to immerse myself in environmental stewardship. And so I really pursued that, and it's just grown into something far more amazing than I could ever imagine. The concept of a watershed really is just like this top-down effect that everything in the watershed makes its way downstream out into the bay in our case. And so it just shows that everybody has to be aligned. Everybody has to care in the same way, because if someone upstream doesn't care and they dump something in the creek, it's going to affect people downstream. And if people downstream don't care either, they're even closer to the bay. And so that effect is felt even more heavily. And so building community through work and helping people realize that they can have an impact, especially young people. Pretty much everyone on my crew is under 30. A lot of people are under 25. And so just introducing people who may or may not have a background of like environmental education. I went to school for environmental studies, but a lot of the people on my crew didn't go to college, but they're still motivated. They're still inspired and always wanting to learn just as I am. And so the work is super fulfilling, and obviously we get to help the planet, but we also just get to learn and interact with new species and see beautiful places, which is also a blessing.
Mm. You went to school for environmental studies. Can you talk more about how you got involved in this kind of work?
Yeah. So, I went to UC Santa Cruz and studied environmental studies, and then moved back to the Bay, moved in with my grandpa in Richmond, and my mom found out about Urban Tilth. And so their focus is mostly on food sovereignty. But when I went in to talk to the person at the front desk, they told me about this watershed program just because I had expressed my interest for aquatic species and grew up fishing and all these things. And they said this program would be perfect for you. And so I did that apprenticeship. It was about 3 months, 18 weeks or so, and went through that program and just opened my eyes to all these natural spaces in the community that I was now living in. And so it felt perfect. You never know really coming out of college, like, are you going to be able to find something that aligns with your interests and what you studied, or are you going to just end up doing some monotonous jobs, working for some industry. And so I was so happy to find something so fulfilling that just sparked my excitement about the environment. And it's just taken off from there.
What about you, Richard? How did you come to found Saved by Nature to connect underserved South Bay communities with the healing power of the outdoors?
So it's a big question you're asking.
We have time.
So let's see. So let me just speak from the heart and just say that, I grew up in South San Jose, a low income community of color. And when I was younger, I wasn't exposed to nature. When I was 10 years old, the Boys and Girls Club, they took us to San Jose Family Camp. And that was the first time and only time that I was exposed to nature at 10 years old. And so, the neighborhood I grew up in was like, it had a culture of gangs and drugs, including my family. And so I fell into, historical, injustices. I ended up losing many years of my life. And when I did return home, you know, I needed to fill the negative time with something that was positive. And so I began to fish. And, you know, I didn't have any money. And also my wonderful mother had bought me a fishing license and a annual fishing pass to Santa Clara County Parks. And every day to escape, you know, the negativity of my neighborhood, I would wake up in the morning and go fishing. And I'd fish along Coyote Creek over into Coyote Valley, which is a very important, you know, area. And that's kind of where I built an affinity for nature. And, you know, it was like repetition, you know, being out in nature. And when I was out there, you know, I had a very traumatic past, you know. But when I was out there, you know, I was at peace, not like thinking of, you know, my past or the future. I was just in the moment, you know, fishing, walking in nature, hiking, listening to the birds singing, which may sound funny to some people, and just the leaves rustling, which were, you know, which I know now were Fremont cottonwoods and black cottonwoods, which make this wonderful sound when the wind hits them. And so, you know, eventually, you know, I was working and, you know, my coworkers were like always making fun of me because I was spending my money on going camping and fishing. But for me, it was just, it was a new lifestyle that I was trying to, you know, create and reinvent myself. And so, eventually when that, you know, the economy crashed, what, maybe 12, 13 years ago now, I was like, you know, I am really happy when I'm in nature. Like, you know, it helps me out a lot, like mental health wise, right? And so maybe I can consider, you know, going back to school. And so that's when I, you know, enrolled in the West Valley College Park Management Program. And that's when I first had the idea of creating a nonprofit organization that would be able to help others like myself, right, in a healing way. But like, I was still trying to find my own way. So I didn't really know, like, you know, it was just a thought, a dream, right? And so then eventually I graduated from West Valley College and then went to San Jose State. And after working in parks for a decade and having two environmental degrees, I was having difficulty finding full-time employment. And so then that's when I decided and said, hey, you know, I'm going to take this leap of faith and create an organization, you know, for people of color, but not only for people of color, but for everyone. And also a safe place that one day I hope that, you know, that I'd be able to, you know, hire others, that, you know, come from a background, like myself. And that's how it kind of, you know, came about, starting Saved by Nature. And then the services, you know, are kind of related to, you know, kind of things that have happened. Kind of like the services that we provide are the same services and things that help change my life. And so we do like camping and hiking and fishing and things like that. Yeah. So, but yeah, in a nutshell.
Richard, really amazing hearing you talk about how the Boys and Girls Club exposed you to nature for the first time. And that just speaks to the importance of these community programs and, you know, what they do for people like yourself, exposing you to nature. Do you remember what it was like when you had that experience at age 10?
It's funny that you say that because I was just talking about it because I was just with leading a hike at Mount Madonna, which the director who took me there was at the hike, and we were just talking about it. And I kind of explained it as some sort of Garden of Eden because the rainbow trout were swimming through my legs in crystal clear water and waterfalls. And so it was amazing. And so what I have done is created the Summer Science Project in partnership with the Boys and Girls Club. And this year is our fourth year. And what we do is partner with four other organizations and provide 6 weeks of environmental education going into six different clubs. And so I give back to the same club, and then we'll also take them buses provided on field trips, and then we also have another program where we buy them lunch, provide entrance fee and gas cards. We have one program that's been going for 4 years, and we just incorporated two new programs for the Boys and Girls Club. But our hopes are to be able to raise enough money to be able to take them to San Jose Family Camp, but it's pretty expensive, you know? But the hopes are is that we can take them back to San Jose Family Camp, where I went to when I was 10 years old, which I have a campsite reserved for my family on April 30th and all. But anyhow, and so it is full circle for me, as far as the Boys and Girls Club, to be able to work with the same director who took me up there, who has the same dreams as me, as bringing that program back.
So then you in turn exposed your family to nature, it sounds like.
Absolutely. And so when I did want, you know, made the decision to change my life, I remembered San Jose Family Camp at the age of 25 years old. And at that point, I had my own family, my wife and my two young boys. And I said, I want to take them to this place that I remember. So 15 years later, I returned back to that place with my own family.
You know, Richard, just a couple minutes before we go to break, I feel like when we talk about gang violence in this country or gun violence, it's a very surface level conversation. We don't really get into the root causes. Sometimes you hear, well, it is connected to poverty, but that's about it. What are your thoughts about that, given that you have personal experience and that you work with young kids who have to deal with gang violence, and you've seen transformations within yourself and within so many others?
Well, I think that gangs and poverty don't discriminate. Coming from a neighborhood with Vietnamese, Samoan, Black, Caucasian, and Hispanic, I think that, sometimes that it can be embedded in our culture and in our families. And sometimes, again, historical injustices set us up for failure. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, we are left with the decision to make. But for me, and from working in this area, sometimes it's about exposing that person to what's right or wrong, because if you're raised in that culture or family, you may not know the difference. And some people may not understand that, but I do. So it's up to us. Swazali was saying, it's a responsibility for us to provide that alternative. And that's what the Boys and Girls Club did for me at 10 years old. Between the time I was 10 and 13 years old. And unfortunately, I made the wrong decision, you see, but it's about providing those alternatives: hiking, camping, fishing, mental health, things, that sometimes our families don't talk to us about, for me.
Richard Tejada founded Saved by Nature in 2018 to connect underserved South Bay communities with the healing power of nature experiences, and to share his own story of how fishing and timing the outdoors helped him overcome a South San Jose childhood marred by gang violence. Richard Tejada will receive the Community Hero Award from the Bay Nature Institute. It is going to be in person this year at the David Brower Center in Berkeley on March 27th from 2 to 5 p.m. You can find ticket information at yourcallradio.org. The ceremony will also be online. We're also joined today by Solwazi Ala. Solwazi will receive the Young Leader Award for the work he does with Urban Tilth, a nonprofit based in Richmond, California, to help build a more sustainable, healthy, and just local food system. Megan Isidore will receive the Environmental Educator Award. Megan is co-founder and executive director of the River Otter Ecology Project. She founded that project in 2012 to investigate the under the radar return of river otters to the Bay Area after their numbers had dwindled. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We will be talking about a ProPublica San Francisco public press investigation that found, in spite of hundreds of permanent supportive housing units sitting empty in San Francisco, thousands of homeless people are still on waiting lists. We'll also talk about coverage of Vladimir Putin's war on Ukraine and the role of war journalists in documenting the immense suffering of people impacted by war. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email us yourcall@kalw.org. If you'd like to talk to, if you have a question for our guest today or a comment for our guest today, we'd love to hear from you. Yourcall@kalw.org, or you can give us a call at 800-525-9917. Sorry, that's the pledge line. I've been pledging for the last couple of days. The Your Call line is 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. And again, thanks to everyone who called and clicked. Thank you so much for your support. Today, we are talking about the Bay Institute, honoring Bay Area-based activists, environmental educators, and up-and-coming young conservationists at their annual Local Hero Award ceremony. It'll take place in person and online this year at the David Brower Center in Berkeley on March 27th from 2 to 5 p.m. You can find ticket information at yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by Salwazi Ala, Watershed Restoration Field Crew Manager at Urban Tilth, Megan Isidore, Co-Founder and Executive Director of the River Otter Ecology Project, and Richard Tejada, Founder and Executive Director of Saved by Nature. And if you'd like to learn more about their organizations, you can find links at yourcallradio.org. So, Megan, let's talk about your work and how you got involved. I understand that you never expected to have a career in science, but you moved to Marin in 1998 and you turned your attention to watershed ecology while working with the endangered coho salmon.
Yes, that's right. I had a career in medical risk management for a long time. And then I moved to Marin. I was standing on the banks of the creek, looking down into the gorgeous flowing water that we've heard about a little more. And I saw this beautiful, bright red coho salmon come swimming upstream and spawning. And I had seen salmon before, mostly on my dinner plate. So it was all new to me. And I joined up with SPAWN, which is a local salmon protection and watershed network. And I began to volunteer with them. And I did it because I really loved being outside, being in nature. I was 40 years old. I didn't know anything about it, really. And I spent the next 10 years, I quit my corporate job, and I spent the next 10 years learning watershed ecology, mostly by volunteering and by working on other people's research projects, which was incredibly fun. I got to be out in the creek. I got to be looking for salmon and understanding the life cycle of salmon and how it all related, how healthy watersheds are important, not just for salmon, but for all of us, and really learning those webs of connections. And that's what excites me. And that's why I became an ecologist, more or less, by hook or by crook. And after about 10, 12 years of doing that, my co-founders and I started seeing more river otters in the creek. And we thought, well, what's going on? Are we seeing them more, or are there more? What's the status of river otters in Marin County and in the Bay Area in general? And when we looked into it, we saw that they were considered non-occurring in most of the Bay Area because their numbers had dwindled. And nobody was really paying a lot of attention to them. So we saw a big data gap that could be filled. And we decided to fill it. And we've been working on that for the last 10 years. And we started with Otter Spotter, as you mentioned, which is a statewide and now actually North America-wide way of crowdsourcing otter sightings. It's really fun because it gets the message out to people about river otters, about watersheds. It raises awareness of the fact that river otters can come back to places where they weren't for a long time because we clean up our watersheds. So again, it's that hopeful message of things that we can do. And in addition to that, we're doing some research monitoring a 100-mile stretch of waterways, mostly in Marin County, And that's really interesting and fun work. We involve a lot of volunteers with that. We have a whole cadre of volunteers who go out and they monitor trail cameras with us. They collect scat for genetic analysis. They collect fecal swabs, which sound gross and kind of are, but we get lots of good information from those samples that we collect. So we work with a lot of different people. And in addition to this research, we decided we really needed to do education for both adults and children to help everyone understand the story of the salmon and why it matters. So that's what we've been doing for 10 years, and we're having our 10th anniversary this year. We're very happy.
Wow. Well, congratulations. Can you tell us more? I love this otter spotter. And on your otter spotter page, you have these cute otters that are just kind of right above the water. You can just see their heads. And your logo is also so cute. So tell us more about how people can get involved and become an otter spotter.
Sure. Becoming an otter spotter is pretty easy. There are otters back all over the Bay Area. They are in Richmond around the urban Tilth watersheds. I bet you've seen them, Sawazi. They're down in South San Francisco in Coyote Creek, which Richard was talking about. They're really all over the Bay Area. So if you're walking along and you see a river otter or something that you think might be a river otter, sometimes it's a muskrat or a beaver or some other animal, we're happy to see photos of them. Snap a photo. Go to our website, click on the otter spotter icon, and it takes you to, or you can do this on your phone. It's easy to do on your phone. It takes you to a map. You pin it on the map and you put in information about your sighting. And the main thing I tell people is don't be afraid if you're not sure it's an otter. It's hard to figure out what you're looking at in dark water sometimes. So send in your sighting, and we love to talk to people about what they've seen. So if you're not sure, we can discuss it and maybe figure it out. So crowdsourcing these sightings is really important, because it's really important for us to understand what species are in our watersheds and on our land in order to protect them. So doing this, the otter spotter sightings in the past 10 years have increased the river otter range map by 4,100 square miles. And most of that is around the San Francisco Bay Area. So it's a pretty good success. And the reason it's a success is because people care and people have put their sightings in. So we want to thank all of our otter spotters. I'm sure some of you are out there listening today. Thank you so much.
You just reminded me, we do shows about so many animals, whether it's manatees, dolphins, orcas. I don't think we've done a show about sea otters. So what interesting facts can you share with us about sea otters? I'm learning on your website that river otters do not swim on their backs like sea otters. They can swim along with just their head showing. They can dive and roll, and they often stay underwater for up to 15 or 20 seconds. On land, river otters are agile, can run quickly and climb trees. What other facts can you share about river otters?
Well, one of my favorite things about river otters is how adaptable they are. And they're adaptable in many ways. Socially, they can be in big groups, they can be in small groups. The only groups that don't hang out together in river otters very often are males and female adults. So if you see a river otter with pups and another otter with her, that is not her mate. That is probably an adult sister or daughter that is with that otter. But otters are also happy on their own. They also eat a huge variety of food. People often think they just eat fish and crayfish, but not so. They'll eat any protein they can get their little teeth around, including birds. What else about river otters? They're very small animals. They're dark. So they're kind of hard to see. And if you're looking for them along a waterway, you'll want to look for big ripples. Like if a huge fish, like a salmon, is coming through, sometimes you'll see big ripples. Same thing with river otters, large ripples, lots and lots of bubbles, because they have that super thick fur that traps bubbles. So when they go underwater, the bubbles come up for a long time after that.
Well, you can learn more about the Otter Spotter and the River Otter Ecology Project at yourcallradio.org. Megan Isidore is co-founder and executive director of the project, and she will receive the Environmental Educator Award from the Bay Area Institute. The award ceremony is March 27th from 2 to 5 p.m. at the David Brower Center in Berkeley, California. It'll be in person this year after a two-year virtual hiatus, but it'll also still be streamed online. We're also joined today by Richard Tejada, who will receive the Community Hero Award. Richard founded Saved by Nature in 2018 to connect underserved South Bay communities with the healing power of the outdoors. And Solwazi Ala will receive the Young Leader Award for the work he does with Urban Tilth, a nonprofit in Richmond, California, founded to help build a more sustainable, healthy, and just local food system. Solwazi, going back to the watersheds, I mean, all of what you're talking about is also connected here. And one of the mottos of the Watersheds program is the health of our creeks and communities are intertwined. We cannot have one without the other. Can you talk more about that?
Sorry, it just broke up very briefly. If you could repeat the question.
Oh, of course. So one of the mottos of the Watersheds program is the health of our creeks and our communities are intertwined. We cannot have one without the other. And all of the work that you're doing is so intertwined. So can you talk more about that?
Yeah, definitely. All intertwined. The places that we're in, a lot of the creeks that we're working in, especially Wildcat Creek, which is right over near our main farm, is right along a neighborhood. And so it's important to engage people and help them understand, like, this creek is here, this natural space is here, these native plants and animals are here, and to help them feel welcome. And that's a part of the work that we're doing to transform these spaces back to something welcoming that people want to visit, instead of it feeling like this creepy place, this creepy dark place covered in invasive species. And so definitely trying to engage the community in that way. And then also through our apprenticeship programs, we have the Basins of Relations apprenticeship, which I talked about. That was how I got introduced. And that's for people like ages 19 through 30, maybe. And then we have the summer apprenticeship program, which is for youth like middle school, high school age. And I helped lead that last year. And so we're just engaging these people in our community to help them understand what's there, so that they can appreciate it as I do, and then just grow together. The more people power, the better. We can't do it alone, and so yeah, everybody contributing is just, it makes our impact even more.
So, Wazi, we have an email from Genevieve who writes, Urban Tilth is the best. Wondering if there are any resources for people doing this kind of work in Bayview Hunters Point. I feel like I'm an island with myself introducing permaculture practices with the property I care for, and keep up the great work.
Well, thank you so much. I don't know of any resources in that area necessarily, but I'm sure there's organizations scattered around everywhere. And even if there isn't, just to keep doing what they're doing, and make your own small impact and get your friends together and start doing more work. You know, like, even if there's not an organization dedicated to that, you can always become something. And so it's good to see people taking that initiative themselves. And yeah, thank you so much for the support. I love Urban Tilth as well.
Well, Genevieve, thanks for the email. If anyone has resources for Genevieve, please email yourcall@kalw.org, or you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. We're almost the show is almost over, but we do have some more time if you have any questions or comments for our guests. Let's hear from Mickey in San Francisco. Hi, Mickey. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm sorry that I missed a lot of the show. I just tuned in about the otter sightings, and I'm really glad that there are more otters around than I thought. I wanted to, I don't know if anyone mentioned this before, but there is a really great app by the California Academy of Sciences in conjunction with National Geographic, and it's called iNaturalist. And iNaturalist, learn more about it. You can get the app from an app store. I got onto that when Bernal Public Library organized the residents of Bernal Hill to document all of the species on the hill. And you can take a picture of something and it will suggest what you're seeing. So this goes for insects, animals of all kinds, plants, and it's worldwide too. You can go to a global map to see, you know, migrations are being charted and where things are being sighted, and, you know, like butterflies and all sorts of things. It's a really fascinating app if you want to get people involved trying to, you know, lodge their sightings on a really great app.
Thank you so much for that, Mickey. It's been a while, but we did have someone from the Cal Academy on to talk about iNaturalist, and you can find it at iNaturalist.org. They've had over 92 million observations to date, which is pretty incredible. So thank you so much for that suggestion. You know, I wanted to also talk about something Richard brought up earlier. How do we expect someone to do something they know nothing about? I wrote that down, Richard, because I think it's so important, and I feel like more and more people are learning and want to do something, but they're not sure what. So can you just elaborate on that a bit and how you try to reach people that might not have experience with this or don't know much about it?
Well, we have a volunteer orientation intake on April 10th. No kidding.
If great. You're,
for those people that are interested. But what that means, because, you know, it's about getting the community involved, right? And so a lot of people like the river otter. Not many people know that the river otter are in Coyote Creek, let alone the California beaver and some, you know, remnant salmon. And so, you know, how do we expect people to care about them if they don't know that they're there? If they're just like seeing them on TV and reading about them in books, you know, but they're here in our own backyard. Another one of my saying is you don't have to go to the Sierra Nevada to see a rainbow trout. They're here in throughout the whole Bay Area and all of our waterways and creeks. And so as educators, I love hearing the stories of the other awardees and the work that they're doing, because it so relates into what I was saying, and they're making the river otters aware or restoration or educating people about invasive species, whatever it may be. But how are people supposed to know what's an invasive and what's not unless you go to school, right? And so making them aware of why do we want to restore this area into native species? What's going to happen after? If we just say, oh, you just want to put in some plants, you know, but we have to educate them on why we're going to put them in. Well, once we put them in, then comes the pollinators, the insects, then comes the hummingbirds, then comes the birds, then comes the larger birds, then comes some little mammals that wants to eat some of the berries off of those native plants, right? And then next thing you know, you got a whole new food web and a whole new, biodiversity system going on, right? Mm. And so, how do we expect people to know about something they know nothing about? Started with the Chinook salmon in the Guadalupe River, when I started working there, you know, 13 years ago, and people, they didn't believe us. We're like, there's Chinook salmon and rainbow trout in Guadalupe River. And they're like, no, there's not. And so like, there's beaver too. And like, no, there isn't. And so we started taking pictures and showing them, right? And so very applicable to the river otter, which are making a comeback, right? And slowly. But, you know, maybe we can expedite that through education.
Hmm. You know, Richard, you talked about the transformative experiences you had being introduced to nature. And I just wonder, can you share a couple experiences with some of the youth you work with today? What, I'm sure you have so many stories, but can you share one that really stands out for you?
Absolutely. So we were leading At Promise Youth. They're not called At-Risk Youth anymore. In my day, I was called At-Risk Youth, but now it's been renamed to At Promise Youth, with our youth with a promise, right?
Oh,
and so
we
were, taking a Hispanic group from South County, which is Gilroy, from a group called Youth Alliance. And what I did was I hired an artist. We, you know, bought Togo sandwiches and we took them up to Castle Rock State Park for a hike and to teach them how to paint. And so we went to the Tifone Rocks and, you know, and I was talking to them about, you know, how, and I wore my state park uniform that day to make them feel comfortable. Although, cause I was still, you know, think I was working for state parks, but I was wanting to start Save a Nation. I just had started Save a Nation. I was kind of on, you know, and so anyways, I was wearing my uniform so they felt comfortable around a person of color wearing a uniform. Right. And then, one of them, you know, later, and I was telling them that, hey, you don't have to dress like everybody else. Like you don't have to have, you know, North Face pants and, you know, these hiking shoes, you know, Patagonia shirt to come into nature. You come as you are, you know? Mm. And so the story is that one of those youth ended up going to Yosemite National Park, was motivated to go. And he says, Richard, you know, when I was there, I was wearing a white t-shirt, Cortez, and some Dickies. And normally I would feel out of place, but I remembered what you told me, and that was it. I belong here. Hmm. And I had a wonderful time.
Oh.
And it's important for me that we have these impacts on them. And because, you know, it's a life-changing experience. And that's what experience the change, it's our slogan and or logo, whatever it may be, right? So anyhow, thank you. Yeah.
It's such a... I would love to hear more. And if you want to get involved with Saved by Nature, there's a spring volunteer orientation and intake on April 10th from 9 to 11:30. It's in San Jose. And you can find more information at yourcallradio.org or savedbynature.org. They have all these great hikes, seniors hike for health, April 19th, Bay to Bay hike, Skyline Ridge, Open Space Preserve, May 7th, Introduction to Reiki on March 26th. This is so incredible, all the great work you're doing. Savedbynature.org. Solwazi, we're almost out of time. Let's see how much time we have. Actually, a couple minutes. Do you want to share also maybe a story of, you know, some of the people that you work with who are under 25 or really any age, any stories stand out for you?
Yeah. So last year, like I said, was my first year helping to lead this summer apprenticeship program for these young youth. And it was just an amazing experience overall. It wasn't something I'd ever done. I haven't really had any history with education, like me teaching someone else. And so it was a little bit of a step out of my comfort zone. And we started off and the kids were pretty shy and they weren't really sure how much they wanted to engage or if they wanted to answer the questions that I was asking. But over time, you could just see them getting more and more interested and opening up, and their eyes would light up when things interest them and excited them. And we just got to share so many amazing moments together out at the creek. We went on field trips to Lake Temescal, the California Academy of Sciences. We went on a hike in Fairfax to a waterfall. Mm-hmm. And just some of these kids had never been to these places, never seen places like that. And so it was just amazing for me to be able to share that with them, and then also just to also learn from them and hear their perspective on where they live and what they've been exposed to, how little or how much they knew about nature before they joined the program. And I'm still in contact with so many of them, hearing about them applying to colleges and new jobs or sports successes, and they all want to come back this upcoming summer. So, wow. And I'm like, you guys are going to get the same I'll try and change the lessons, but I don't want to get the same spiel that I gave last year. But they were so happy to go through the program, and it was just amazing for me to have that experience and be able to expose them to the things that I love and get excited about.
Well, that's great. And you can find more about the great work Urban Tilth does, urbantilth.org. And we're almost out of time, but Megan, do you have a story you'd like to share in about a minute or less?
I do. We do some work with a terrific high school out here, Tomales High School, and I take students out kayaking. And a lot of them most of them have never been kayaking before or had a chance to be out on the water. And a lot of them are pretty nervous to get into these little kayaks and go out on Tomales Bay. But it happens every single time. The minute they get out there on the water, in the boats, their faces light up, their spirits raise, and they love it. And they realize immediately it's that direct connection between how beautiful and how privileged we are to live in such a place as this. I love to see that connection being made. Mm. So that's my favorite story about out there. It happens every time we go out. And it really happens to me too. Every time I go out onto the water or out into nature, that direct connection happens, and that makes stewardship want to happen.
Mm. Wow. Well, thank you all so much for sharing these great stories, and congratulations on your awards. Megan Isidore is co-founder and executive director of the River Otter Ecology Project. Solwazi Alla is watershed restoration field crew manager at Urban Tilth. Richard Tejada is founder and executive director of Saved by Nature, and they will be awarded at the Bay Nature Institute ceremony at the David Brower Center in Berkeley, March 27th from 2 to 5 p.m. It'll also be online. Thank you all so much for your great work, and congratulations. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And huge thanks to Chris Nooney for producing today's show. Thank you so much, Chris, for your great work. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.